Hello everyone, thank you for being here today. So today I'm going to talk about the influence of phosphorus management on the potential for phosphorus loss through leaching. So just looking at the United States and at Minnesota, we know that we have some environmental challenges with water quality. As you can see on the right, we have some eutrophication, these giant algae blooms that come from too much nutrient in the water. And that's mostly due to phosphorus, this eutrophication is. And on the map on the left, you see Minnesota. And most of Minnesota is in blue. And that means that it is impaired. Its lake shed is impaired. And that's calling for a reduction in phosphorus from anywhere to 10 to 80%. So we know that we need to improve this. And according to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, about 29% of all eutrophication in the state of Minnesota is due to agriculture. So where is this phosphorus coming from? In agriculture systems, there's mainly two ways that phosphorus is reaching freshwater systems. One is runoff, where the soil or will phosphorus is attached to the soil particles, and the second is leaching, where you have soluble phosphorus losses in the water. And runoff is very highly studied. There's some phosphorus indices that have been developed to predict phosphorus loss through runoff. But leaching has not been studied a significant amount. Sometimes its losses have been considered insignificant because its concentrations are low. But we have reason to believe that because of the increased weather patterns that we're having in Minnesota, we're having more rain, that this might influence the amount of soluble phosphorus that we have that is leaching and threatening these freshwater systems. So in this graphic here, we see in the last 100 years that we've had a significant increase in the intensity and the frequency of precipitation. So my objectives were to look at corn and soybean systems and see how across a variety of soil types, how there's different factors in these soils that are influencing phosphorus losses. So first of all, we were looking at initial soil test phosphorus levels. In Minnesota, we classify our soils as low, medium, high, very high, or very low, and we make recommendations for fertilizer on that. But in this study, we looked at the low, medium, high, and very high testing soils to see how that would influence the phosphorus loss through leaching. We also looked at the timing of a fertilizing event. So if you fertilize and then you wait a certain amount of time, how is this influencing your loss through leaching? So we had a one-day treatment, a three-day treatment, a seven-day treatment, and an immediate leach, which was 2 hours after a fertilizer application. After this study, this led us to a volume study. So I looked at different volumes as leaching volumes and determined if that was influencing the amount of phosphorus that was lost in leaching. And finally, we were looking to see if phosphorus leaching could be predicted in some way with current phosphorus soil tests, such as the Bray P1, the Olsen P, the bioavailable phosphorus extractant, or the water extractable phosphorus test. We selected sites based on where we had a prevalent amount of corn and soybean production. So in the state of Minnesota, you can see on the left again, the darker shaded counties are those with higher production of corn. So we are aiming for sites with a lot of corn and soybean production, and we wanted a diversity of soil types. All of these sites that were selected have been under previous phosphorus management since either 2009, 2010, and we selected 16 plots at each of these sites to range in soil test levels. So high, very high, medium, and low. And looking at these sites individually, we wanted to have a diverse representation of soil physical properties. So we wanted a sandy loam, clay loam, and silt. And from this, we calculated bulk density and field capacity. And because they have different water holding capacities, and we wanted to balance this in our leaching study, we used our field capacity measurement to calculate the leaching volume that would be used at each of these sites. So we drew columns from each of these sites, and we drew columns from 16 plots with a hydraulic tractor probe, a Giddings probe, and we went down 15 centimeters deep for the soil core, and the core was 3.8 centimeters in diameter. We brought these columns back to the lab and treated them with approximately 100 kilograms of phosphorus per hectare as a solution of potassium dihydrate phosphate solution. We attached another PVC pipe to the top of the column to hold the deionized water that would act as our leaching agent. So we arranged all of the soil columns in an apparatus that would hold 16 columns at a time, and they were organized by the timing of their leaching. So we would start with the control, which had no fertilizer applied, followed by a zero-day treatment, which was 2 hours after fertilizer application, and then a one-day, three-day, and seven-day. The leachate was collected in these Erlenmeyer flasks, but the flasks were also hooked up to a vacuum. And the vacuum kept the pressure on all of the columns uniform, so that ensured a uniform leaching rate and uniform leaching across all of the columns. A subset of the leachate in the flasks was then tested and analyzed for phosphorus concentration using the Murphy-Riley colorimetric, and this was for water extractable phosphorus. Now, as we were going through this leaching study, we found that there were three basic ways that we could quantify our phosphorus leaching losses. First, we had the colorimetric, which was our reading right off of the plate. However, we didn't feel that that was a good, standardized enough for representation of phosphorus loss. So we balanced this further by looking at total leachate. And that would be calculating the concentration, your colorimetric concentration, and standardizing it for the total amount of leachate in your flask. And from there, then we could standardize this further by soil mass. So putting this concentration of phosphorus per gram of soil in each column. And we see that the clay and the silt, they both follow the same trend. They both decrease across these three types of measurements. However, when we look at our sandy soil, the green bar, we see that when you use soil mass to standardize, that we got a lower number than what we expected to. And this kind of led us to believe that because sand has a higher bulk density, that it can lead to underestimating your phosphorus loss in those soils. So when you're comparing across a variety of soil types, we felt that when you balance for soil mass, it may misrepresent how much phosphorus is leaching. So for that reason, we just decided to use phosphorus load across our soil types to compare phosphorus loss. Now, as we expected, as you increase your initial soil test phosphorus level, which is our x-axis, we have low, medium, high, and very high, you're also increasing your phosphorus load. So this was followed similar to the studies that have been done on runoff, that increasing initial phosphorus levels also led to increased phosphorus leaching levels. Same held true for our hypotheses on leaching time. So the less time you have between a leaching event and fertilization of the surface of the column, the more phosphorus leaching that occurred. So you can see our immediate treatment, our zero day, had significantly more phosphorus leached compared to our one-day treatment. And then it decreased even further from three-day to seven-day. Now, when we identified leaching loss by site, we were surprised by what we found, because our sandy loam, the far right column, the purple column, actually leached the least amount of phosphorus, which was not intuitive to us. We assumed that our sandy soils would leach the most phosphorus. So we looked further and looked at our leaching volumes, since our leaching volumes were standardized by soil type. And the more leachate water we put through, it seemed, the more phosphorus that was leached out. So this led us to our volume study. So averaged, looking at the graph on the left, we see averaged across all sites and leach times that as you increase your volume of water going through the column, you're going to increase your leaching losses. When we looked at just our controls with no fertilizer added, we saw that the sand, silt, and the clay both increased at a similar rate for phosphorus loss when you increase that volume as well. So this kind of debunked our theory that maybe as you add more water, that you may be diluting the phosphorus in the soil. So here on the left, we have our concentration of phosphorus and then our three volumes again, and these are not significantly different from one another, indicating that if you are adding more water, you're not diluting the phosphorus in the water. So The runoff phosphorus can sometimes be predicted with these P indices that are based off of current soil tests that we already have, such as the Bray, the Olson, the water extractable P, and the bio P. So we found that our leaching loss numbers, so phosphorus concentration, phosphorus load, or phosphorus standardized for per gram of soil, did not show a strong correlation with these tests, leading us to suggest that there's not a good test right now that could predict phosphorus leaching losses. So in conclusion, higher phosphorus loss went up with higher soil test phosphorus levels initially. It also increased as you decreased the amount of time between fertilization and leaching, and it also increased with leaching volume, which was the most interesting aspect of my study so far. So phosphorus concentration, again, is not changed by the volume of your leaching event. It is not diluted. Phosphorus leaching might actually be predicted if you can take a subsample of your leachate, determine the concentration, and then calculate the total amount of water that's leached in this event for a particular amount of soil. So in a follow-up study, we'd like to look at some more phosphorus fertilizer sources, look at inorganic versus organic, manure versus conventional types of fertilizer, and also look at soluble types of phosphorus fertilizer versus dry. And with that, I'd like to thank my advisor, Dr. Dan Kaiser, my committee, the field crew that worked with me on this, and the Kaiser Fernandez Lab, and my funding source, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. With that, thank you guys, and I'll take any comments and questions. Yes?
It seemed like you had some differences associated with the leachate volume, and that was determined from moisture holding capacity.
Mm-hmm. So,
field measurement? I guess the question is, when you take a core, is there anything about taking the core and the disturbance?
So what we did, that's why we had vacuum on all of our columns so that we could ensure that we had a uniform leaching event. So we didn't put any pressure above field capacity on any of the columns. To try and prevent any type of sidewall compaction, we beveled the bottom of those columns. So I will say that leaching clay versus leaching sand will leach at a different rate, but we did our best to keep it uniform with that vacuum, which helped a lot. Yes?
You just mentioned that soil type will have an influence on the leaching rate. What are some of the other factors that will, from a systems level, will affect phosphorus loss in ecosystems?
So, I mean, this could get into the chemical properties. I didn't talk about this a whole lot, but even in Minnesota, we have some really calcareous soil. So you could have phosphorus that's binding up with those types of soils just because of the nature, the chemical reactions that are going to happen there. So I didn't touch on the chemical side of things a whole lot, but in a system in Minnesota, that might be something to consider. We are doing some carbonate analysis to see if that will influence our phosphorus uptake or sorption.
I have a question. Did you look at P saturation ratio at all in trying to think that helped describe this?
We are in the process of working on phosphorus sorption for all of these sites, and that data I didn't include in this. But we're hoping that might be a good indicator as to what certain types of soil are sorbing how much fertilizer. And it's also probably going to depend on our source as well. So it'll be interesting once we get those numbers back, if sorption is playing a big role in that.
On a sandy soil, you expect the soil solution phosphorus mm-hmm. to move faster, right, compared to a clay soil.
Yes.
Your findings being stable.
So my findings are standardized because there was only a certain amount of water went through, and we also didn't use
right,
and we also didn't look at rate of flow. However, when we did look at the volume study, which was separate, we looked at a sand and a silt and a clay, and the rate was not, granted this is preliminary data, I don't have a lot of data on this, but here on this one here, these slopes here are not statistically different. So This suggests that while they start at a different intercept here, there's a different initial amount of phosphorus that's being lost, that they're leaching at the same rate.
All right, that's all the time we have. Thank you very much.